Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
The always happy, peppy.
Oh my gosh, you know.
Happy.
I don't know if you guys have been listening to the feed before our show.
CBS News.
Between the news and CBS News and... Was it Detroit? Was it your hometown that they had to let somebody go because they couldn't find a vein to basically execute
them? He was too sick to kill him. They were too sick to execute him today. They couldn't find a vein to execute him.
What is the deal? Did you, like, plan this to just have, like, all this, like, downer news?
I know what your guest is going to talk about today here.
Well, it's going to be uplifting after that. So I was about ready to go into the corner and rock myself into a happy place, you know? It was just, like, unbelievable.
It's the Rad Life.
It's the Rad Life. Yeah, well, you know, thank you for that upbeat, not... You know, intro, but...
Well, you said you had the best line. You're not going to use your
best line. I said, yeah, no, you're killing me here. So if you guys listening haven't figured out that this is live radio and we have no clue what we're doing...
That's right.
Then you now know. But today on the show, I have two people that I really respect and admire, and actually they're pretty fun people to be around, even though our topic may be a little bit somber, but it is part of life. And we don't shy away from topics on this show. Definitely
never.
Don't shy away from topics
never.
On this show.
Oh, my goodness.
Tough or otherwise. And so I want to introduce them without any further ado. And it is Neil O'Connor from O'Connor Mortuary. Hi, Neil.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
The famous O'Connor Mortuary here.
The famous O'Connor.
Started, I learned, before the show in 1898, was it?
That's correct.
There you go.
And you're like fourth generation, right?
Just like it.
Wow. Wow. I want to get – that's amazing. I mean, that is such an unusual situation in any industry these days.
Very few multi-generational businesses left anymore.
Yeah. Right.
So kudos. I mean, that's pretty nice, actually, to experience. And you guys do an amazing job. I mean, we'll get into all of that. And then across the table from me, and if you guys are listening to us and you want to see us, you can actually go to the OC Talk Radio Facebook page.
Yeah.
Or the OC Talk Radio YouTube station, YouTube channel, I guess, is the proper terminology, right?
Yeah, right?
And basically, I just elevated your presence. Yeah. And basically, you can watch us. You can also, if you're on live Facebook, you can also actually enter any questions you have in the feed line. You can also call us. And, Paul, give people the number.
We won't answer it.
Nobody's going to call us, I know. We ask people to call us every week and nobody calls. But you go on Facebook and everybody's like, oh, I have this question.
949-330-7761. Operator standing by.
And you can also tweet us, I guess. Paul is monitoring all of this.
We get more questions through Twitter and chat than we do in phone. People just don't want to pick up a phone.
What's the hashtag for Twitter?
OC Talk Radio.
Okay. So Paul is command control over there, and you can't see him because we just try to save you from
that embarrassment.
There's no camera feed for Paul. But and across the table from me is my good friend, Becky. How are you, Becky?
I'm great today.
And you have a very important role at O'Connor, I think. And Neil, do you agree?
Absolutely.
You're not going to give Becky's last name? It's
Well, she's my good friend, Becky Lamica, and she basically has been at O'Connor, gosh, as long as I've known about O'Connor, but how long have you been at O'Connor?
Almost 5 years now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And amazing job. I mean, you agree?
She is amazing. I'm kind of really putting
her on the spot, right? What's he going to say? What's he going to say?
Right, he's on the air. He's on live feed. But no, it really is. You guys do things in a different manner, and it's all motivated by your genuine care during those difficult times when people are dealing with loss and grief. But you actually have multi-layers to the way you provide your service, and it's very personable. And, I mean, it speaks volumes to why you guys are fourth-generation, basically, business being around, right? And I don't know whether this is something new or maybe it's just, you know, the way that it manifests itself is constantly changing based on needs and, you know, the world around us. But I've always been very, very impressed from day one just about the approach, the personal ability of the service. So let's talk a little bit about O'Connor. How long has, I mean, Paul kind of alluded to it. How did it start? Who started it? Were you guys Orange County based to begin with?
Good question.
Give us a little background.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, started in 1898, actually in Los Angeles. the parent company.
We got to get him to talk into the mic, though, not the rod here.
The parent company was Cunningham and O'Connor Mortuary. Started in 1898. So that was my great grandfather, and another gentleman, Mr. Cunningham, started it.
Mm-hmm. Did he come over from Ireland?
Or he did actually. He was an immigrant. He left Ireland under not so good circumstances. Mm-hmm.
Was it during the Great Famine here? Did he come over in the 1840s?
No, it was a little after that. Mm-hmm. The British soldiers came to collect taxes, mm-hmm. and he made them disappear. Mm-hmm. And his mom said,
you better
get on the next boat to America and never come back. Wow. And so he worked his way, obviously, from Ellis Island all the way across the country to California, met Thomas Cunningham, and Thomas told him, if you can raise X amount of dollars, I'm looking to start a mortuary or buy one, a current mm-hmm. one. And from my understanding, my great-grandfather borrowed a couple thousand dollars from a relative, mm-hmm. and that's where it started.
And so your great-grandfather, not necessarily in the old country or coming across the country, actually was involved in this business. This is just something that once he got to California, an opportunity presented itself?
That's correct.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Because that's unusual. When my great-grandfather came over, there's obviously a bunch of them. So, but one of my great grandfathers, my mother's great grandfather, was named Michael Keating, and he was a stonemason in Ireland. So when he came, he became a stonemason and ended up starting a marble company in Chicago. But immigrants come over; they don't know what else to do.
Well, and this is why I was asking.
Unusual. Usually, you just whatever your parents did, that's what I'm going to do, and you just end up.
And where in Los Angeles?
There was three locations. There was downtown Los Angeles, okay. Off Washington Boulevard, then sure. in Hollywood, and then in Alhambra.
Okay.
And so they were, back in the day, you know, people like history, they were the who's of funeral home. Mm-hmm. So they served most of the stars there, mm-hmm. prominent people from Clark Gable, Bing Crosby, Rudolph Valentino.
How unusual.
Yeah. Yeah, and so there's a long history there. Like I said, if you like history.
No, that's amazing. That's a big story, I mean,
I didn't even know in my childhood, but my dad grew up with John Wayne's family.
Huh.
And so
really?
Wow. We served John Wayne when he died mm-hmm. Through our Laguna Hills location. Mm-hmm. And my dad grew up with Patrick, Michael, mm-hmm. Melinda, still good friends with Melinda this day. And you know, I was a little kid at the time, so kind of had a frame of reference, but not. As you know
Patrick Wayne's press agent for a short period of time. When I came to Hollywood, I got involved as an entertainment press agent back in the 80s. And he wouldn't remember me because he worked. I was just assigned the account, but I worked with him for a while.
Yeah. Well, and for people don't know that are listening in, John Wayne is very much a figure that is associated with Orange County.
Oh, he lived down there.
And in Newport Beach. And, right. And so.
The Wild Goose,
the
boat.
The Wild Goose boat, is right. And it's still probably around. Somebody else probably owns it, right?
Must I? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. But it very
Craig
much...
Craig would know. Your next guy would know.
Yeah, I'll ask Craig. He lives on Balboa. But it's very much a feature and a fixture in Orange County, so that connects the story why out of the Laguna... Is it Laguna Hills?
Location? It is Laguna Hills.
Yeah. Right. That you basically served in.
So how did they become the undertaker to the stars? How there must have been other contenders for that role here.
Well, good question. I don't know the answer, but as we talked about earlier, Paul, before we started the show, was back in the day, and we're going a long time back, if you were Irish Catholic,
yes.
you went and saw your Irish Catholic
sure.
funeral home owner. And
that's right.
Whatever your religious faith or ethnic faith
sure.
combination, you would go
to
work
that
with
one.
Them.
Right.
So I don't know if those
there were Italian
were,
undertakers that took right. care of that community. There were certainly... Because I still go to church, so in the back of our church bulletin, I see O'Connor. That's why I'm familiar with it. I see it all the time in our church bulletin. You must advertise in all the Catholic churches.
I think there's still very much that, especially with immigrant populations. And, I mean, you see it with the Vietnamese, the Cambodian population. Mm-hmm. You know, they basically, there's that internal support for each other. And then I'm sure when it comes to faith or religious practices that, you know, there's probably an affinity during that time, especially that difficult time to lean on.
But he's saying now and nowadays,
right.
you handle all faiths, all different ethnicities, all different groups. So now you might do a Buddhist funeral and a Catholic funeral.
Exactly. That's what I love about, I never thought I'd be in funeral service growing up, and I'll get into
that later. What did you think you're going to be?
You know, obviously NBA star, but I'm white. I'm white and 5'9" on a good day, so I'm disqualified immediately.
He liked WKRP Cincinnati, so he wanted to be a DJ.
That's right. No, when I walked in,
Dr. Johnny Fever.
That's right. Yeah, I want to be.
Okay, so
Venus Flytrap.
Everybody wants to be Venus.
You didn't even let me get up there.
I know. We already had this conversation. Were running late.
So if anybody who's watching and listening doesn't know that this show is about aging, we pretty much all just aged ourselves.
I've heard about the show. Yeah. So getting back to what we're saying.
You've heard about the show, yeah.
The blessing in being a funeral service, you do get to serve almost every faith. So you get to understand people on deep, deep levels, where they come from around the world, what's important. There's so many universal things that are, we love family, we love memories, we love milestones, we love to celebrate, we like to be in community. And so as if you ever go to our website, you will see we have specific plans. So if you're Zoroastrian, if you're Catholic, if you are Buddhist, if you're Hindu, if you're Mormon, if you're Jewish, you name the faith, we want to show good faith that we understand what to do, how to do, the specific language. And it does resonate with people. They sit there and say, wow, you understand me.
Right.
And that's what it is. It's about connecting.
Right. Well, and then there's a lot of nuances. I mean, faith-based care. Whether it is in the case like where you're basically dealing with, where you're serving them at that point of grief in the family, or if it's even like caring for elderly, there's a lot of nutritional habits, things of that nature. There's this assumption that we provide care if you're in a care industry, whichever your area of focus may be, that the care is sort of universally applied. And that is, if it is still even the case, is definitely an old model. And there's definitely nuances. And to your point,
Neil,
there's sensitivities to faith. I mean, there's, if you don't know what you're doing, you may be the most well-intentioned person, but actually make a complete bad mistake that really resonates in a negative way at a time of need when somebody.
And I'll tell you something else that I discovered. Everybody knows, listen to the show. My father and mother have passed away over the last few years. Faith. I don't care if you're a fallen away Catholic or if you never have any faith or you don't care. There is a time when suddenly you're searching for something here. It's a moment of crisis. And faith, whether you believe in it or not, gives you some rock, some foundation to lean upon. It did for me. And the ceremonies that the faiths have developed, as antiquated, as awful as I always thought they were, as gruesome, oh, I got to stare at the body, and then we got to do this, and we got to lower the casket, and we do all these horrible things.
But there's comfort in ritual, right?
There is comfort in ritual. There really is. It gives you, because you don't know what to do at that moment, and you got to do something, and you want to honor your parents. I'm going to get choked up here. You want to honor them. You want to remember them. You want to have that final last send-off, the best it can be. And the more you have those rituals and whatever your faith is or whatever your community is, whatever your background is, I think it's a tremendous thing, and I think it's being lost. My friends were horrified that I went through the full-blown Catholic funeral with my dad. Some of them didn't even want to come. They didn't want to go view the body. I never go to funerals. I never view the body. I'm never going to. When their parents died, they just disappeared. We didn't do anything. Oh, your mom died? Yeah. What are you doing? Nothing. She's just gone. We'll have a little party and a little,
So let's talk about that.
Horrible. Horrible.
How long have you been involved in this, Neil?
28 years.
28 years. Okay. Have you seen a change in how people basically celebrate?
Are funerals less today than they used to be? It seems like they are.
I think it's actually ebbing and flowing. And what I mean by that, when I started years ago, there was, and here's just background, Orange County's cremation rate, and I'm for cremation. Mm-hmm. I personally want to be cremated, but in saying that was 35%. Now it's at 65 to 75%.
Oh, yeah.
Cremation to me does not mean you bypass a ritual ceremony. It enhances, actually, and I'll explain that, what I mean by that. So I've seen people, because of maybe tradition or faith, say, we know the path, we know what we're doing. And I think our society is getting more spiritual than religious to a degree. People are being less church. A lot of churches are losing membership.
Sure.
But what we try and teach, Becky and I, when we go out there, is there's not one set way of doing anything in this world. But when a death occurs, it is so misunderstood, or has been for a long time in Western culture, that you look around the world and people embrace life and death.
Well, yeah.
And everything, the pain, the suffering, the joy, the harmonies in between. Mm-hmm. So our goal, in big picture goal, is to be able to reset that or help make a shift within Western culture, saying, let's look how we view our elders. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people are looking at aging as a negative. Oh, it's an honor to have the gray hair.
We talked about this all the time. This show is all about baby boomers in denial. Baby boomers in denial. We're still 30. I look at me. I still dress like I'm in college here. We still think we're young. We're never going to die. I'm not going to think about getting old. I'm certainly not going to think about losing my parents or any of that type of stuff here. And when it comes to us, it's like we're sticking our head in the sand. I feel, this is just my anecdotal reference, having watched most of my friends lose their parents now in my 60s here, most of them, it was just get it over with as quick as we can. Very little. Cremate them so nobody had to see them. Have a little 5-minute, 15-minute graveside where we'd put the urn or something there, and then have a little party in it and get on with life and get back to work next week. And that's just not, it's not realistic to get over your grief that fast. It doesn't help you get over your grief, and it certainly doesn't honor them. That's what I learned by going through the full-blown deal with my dad.
Well, let me ask you, do you come from an extended family? Like growing up, did you have a lot of people around?
No. My dad was an only child. I'm an only child, so.
Neil, what about you?
I'm the youngest of seven.
Okay, so you had
He's Irish. He's really Irish.
And oh, yeah. We have huge families. I mean, on my mom's side, she was the youngest of seven. My dad actually just has one sister, but she had eight kids. So I come from a very large family. And to me, where I always want to help people kind of understand what Paul was saying is, look at every other milestone in life. Mm-hmm. Birth. Anniversary,
marriage.
So when was the last time, Paul, that someone did not celebrate your birthday? We do it historically.
Last year.
Sorry, I missed it. Oops.
All right, you had to bring that up.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay.
I'll send someone to your residence to.
No, but I'll give you a worse example. Again, baby boomers and younger. We now celebrate graduation from kindergarten. That's a big deal.
Yeah, but preschool.
Preschool. Mm-hmm. We do not celebrate or have anything the moment of death. That's horrible. My friend John, who passed away himself a couple years ago, we're same age, grew up together. We were always another Irish Catholic. We were always debating this. He said he was proud of the fact his children were in their 20s. He'd never taken them to a funeral. Mm. He thought funerals are horrible. When my dad died, he begrudgingly agreed to come. And when my dad wanted to have the full-blown Catholic funeral, so that meant a viewing of the body the night before and a rosary and all this stuff, he said, he got there and he said, I can't go up and look at your dad. And I said, I understand, but to me, I know it all sounds gruesome, but it helps you deal with the finality of it. It helps you face it. It helps you, it brings out the tears. It helps you bring people together. I see why they came up with these ceremonies.
But you see that
I didn't get it for
years. Where I was going with the extended family conversation, and Becky, not to leave you out, but you come from an extended family. Do you mean,
I do, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I do as well. And growing up in that environment, even though you may geographically not be close to one another, but that you know you are part of this extended family that has people of multi-generations, multi-points in their lives, I think there is maybe an understanding to that life journey, and that people also legacy and history of family and stuff like that, they don't disappear. They're just basically not physically there with you, but their influence, you pass on stories, two generations later, you're still talking about something that happened maybe with a great-grandfather, and it becomes a joyful memory, right? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that has part of it as well, because we live in a society that's very, nuclear family, if you will. People are sort of disassociated from their support structure.
And well, so the families are spread all
like
over
this,
the world.
Where do you lean? Where do you go to basically have that sense of belonging as you transition?
So I say faith and rituals are part of it, where many people have given up faith, have no faith, and don't believe in rituals anymore. And I'm going to say one more. We live in a world where there are no problems anymore, just challenges.
But he's cynical.
There's no
too,
problems
right?
so, anymore. We don't a problem. That's negative. We can't ever be negative. Right. So death is the most obvious problem, the most obvious negative. And I think my generation in particular has shunned that whole thing.
Well, and I think you're seeing the result of that. We're the only society that has complicated grief.
Yeah.
You look at every civilization since the beginning of time, and we don't let we move our dead from point A to point B, and we don't let the grieving go it alone. Mm-hmm. We come together as community. As Neil said, we connect. Mm-hmm. And we lost that along the way here. And I think that's one of the things Neil and I are passionate about, is helping people find that value, that spiritual connection, whether you want to call it religion, spirituality, that ritual. Actually,
some belief that something goes on. Yeah.
It helps you find meaning in that loss.
I'll give you another one. I'm sorry, I just got to get one other rant out of the way. I you brought this one up, so I'll open you open the door here. Another one that drives me crazy. Nobody dies anymore. They pass away.
Pass away.
Yeah. And people would say, "Oh, I'm sorry, your dad passed." And no, my dad died. And I hate it when people say, "Well, he passed." And say to somebody, "Well, why can't you say the word death?" Oh no, that's too rude. That's too. It grates on us. It has a bothersome sound to it. Here, we have to make it gentle. We have to make it quiet. When most of my friends' parents died, they never saw them. They weren't there when they died. Somebody quietly took the body. They were in a home or a hospital. Somebody in the middle of the night removes the body very quietly. Nobody sees that. The body is cremated somewhere else by anonymous people, and you get a little jar the next day or two later that says, "Here, this is your dad."
Yeah, but Paul, we don't even go to a butcher to get meat.
No,
I hate to be bloody.
No, that's true,
that.
Too. We're removed
We are so far removed from the source of things that... You know, and we're paying for it, by the way, I think, a price.
I agree.
Right? The disconnectivity, the sort of the superficialness of relationship, depth of relationships.
The easiness to block it all out and just put it away.
So, but I'm curious, Neil, and before I do, Becky, tell people what you do actually at McConnell. You touched on it in what you were talking about.
Well, I'm a thanatologist.
A Huda, what is this?
A thanatologist.
Yes.
Look that up, Paul.
Say
look
that three times.
Yeah,
it's Huda, what? Five times fast you can.
It's a fancy word for a death educator. So that's kind of my cool role at the mortuary. I get to go and educate. I do a lot of work with the healthcare community, telling them, Paul, that it's okay to say the D word.
The
it's
D
okay
word.
To say die.
Am I the only one? Nobody says die or death or anything.
I say
you're spot on.
I say it. I'm a death educator. Try to find that on a Christmas order.
I got certificates that say I'm a death educator. Oh, that's very cool. Yeah.
Did you study for that? Is there courses?
I did.
Yeah, where do you
I
go
did.
Study for
yes.
being a death educator?
I have a
Transylvania
master...
U or something.
Yeah, that's right. I actually have a master's degree in counseling psychology, and then I have a specialty certification. So I went back and got a specialty in thanatology.
So what made you want to do that? Was it a path you were on, you knew you wanted to do, or after you got your master's in counseling that you basically said, oh, this is it? Like what? What is the personal story?
Was,
how did Becky end up?
Were you a gruesome little child that was always burying her dolls or something?
Yeah,
or
right. From Michigan, right?
Oh, you're from Michigan.
Oh, you're from Michigan too? Oh, gosh.
Yeah. She's from actually right close to where Ann Arbor in the University of Michigan.
That's
she's
right.
From Chelsea. She's
go blue.
From, yeah,
the line is drawn here.
Yeah.
Go blue. I was actually in senior care. After I got my master's degree, I worked in senior care. I specialized in working with older adults, was working for a large senior care nonprofit here in Orange County, very happy going about my business. And then there's this mortuary who's popping up and like serving my clients to this wonderful level. Actually, what happened is through the adult day healthcare that I ran, we had a senior who died. He died.
He died. No, he passed away. He disappeared.
The family actually chose O'Connor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his friends were people who attended the center with him, who were post-stroke, who had Parkinson's, who have Alzheimer's. And it was important for them to mark the death and say goodbye to their friend. And so I called up O'Connor and I said, here's the deal. I'm going to bring about 25 people who, you know, have some cognitive issues, who have some physical issues, and I was ready to kind of like...
Some challenges. Spar-
yeah,
no problems, just
and I
challenges.
Was gonna, so I was going to spar a little bit because I was expecting them to say, oh my gosh, you know, you can't bring these people, and how are we going to manage this? And they said, absolutely, they were there to help me get everyone in and get everybody back on the bus. And it was just such a beautiful thing, and they were so welcoming. I thought, you know, this is a special place.
You know, I'll give you another example of that. My aunt's still alive, last of the tribe left here, or the oldest of the tribe. She's 93, my mother's late mother's sister, only sister. And people, she's pretty much homebound, as we've talked about before. She lives out in a little apartment out in Sun City. She moved to be with my mom and dad. My mom and dad died, so now she's kind of by herself. She doesn't have enough money to go to a nursing home, so she makes do, and we talk about a lot on this show. My point is this. Her friends back in Minnesota where she came from, or her friends that she built over the 20 years she's been out in the desert there, just disappear. They just don't call one day, and she has to find out that they're gone. And she wants to immediately go to the ceremony. There's no ceremony. There might be a little celebration of life kind of thing. But they literally just, and she said how cruel it is. These people are just gone. One minute they're there, and the next minute they're not. And everybody's just supposed to move on.
It is. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. It's absolutely
and
heartbreaking.
Why can't we face this? Why can't we mourn their loss and celebrate their life? I don't know why we can't do those two things. And when you do, I was forced to, because my dad, as we talked about, prescribed his funeral in great detail. And he wanted the full-blown Catholic deal. And down to the point that you'll laugh at this, my dad's a good Irish Catholic, too. And so one of the things he insisted on, he must have told me this 50 times before he died, over the years before he died. I want a big party afterwards for all my friends, and I don't want you to go cheap on me here. I want you to buy the good booze, and I want to
top
see
shelf.
All the top shelf, and I want the bottles so they can see that we bought the good booze.
Good stuff.
And it got the good stuff. And I told that at the party, and everybody laughed. But that was the kind of level he had. And I would tell anybody that doesn't think there's value in that, you're so wrong. It meant so much to me as the good boy, always trying to please my dad, to be able to do that one last thing for him and say, okay, Dad, you know, here, and honor his wishes. And to see his friends, who most of whom were in nursing homes or struggling to come out, to see them come out. We used a Forest Lawn, was out in the desert out there. They did a wonderful job. The same thing. They were kind and helping and compassionate and helped us pull this thing together. And there's so many details to do the big deal that I think that's part of the thing, well, too. People don't want to, it's overwhelming, all the thing, the planning. So if you get a good mortuary that can walk you through all that and do a lot of that for, or even if you can pre-plan it, I know it sounds gruesome, but like my dad did, it went so seamlessly and it was so wonderful and so cathartic.
There's something about, and we talk about this even just in terms of senior care and in terms of just aging, right? That the more preemptive or proactive planning that you do, the more engaged you are in the process versus just being in denial of it and just shove it off to the side until you cannot do anything but face it, the more independent the more independence you can exercise in the course of what happens. And that goes all the way through to Paul's point, right, till the end.
Absolutely.
Right, but I mean, you know, your directives, your, you know, not just basically burying your head in the sand about it, actually it empowers you in terms of a quality of life in those last years. And it also, the reality is, it also unburdens somebody else who has to do that later on and really be torn, and even if they are close to meeting your expectations or your wishes, because they have no clue what those are at that point.
And on that, to compare it to when her wife's mother died back in Pennsylvania, we all, the tribe, gathered and we're sisters are there. Nobody knew what to do.
Yeah.
Mother had left nothing. It was horrible.
Let me just add to your point, because I think it's a matter of changing our lens or I don't say word choice, but when you said, hey, you get the benefits mm-hmm. of pre-planning, you received that gift. And mm-hmm. that's what we try and teach is if you can look at this, is it's eventuality, still 1-to-1 ratio.
Yeah, right. Nobody gets out alive.
Most parents, as your father did, had the wisdom to almost force you through his pre-plan and say, I know what is better for you, young man.
Mm-hmm. Final act of parenting,
right.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Even though that's the last thing you wanted to hear.
Right. Oh, please.
Yeah. And so really, exactly. To look at it is, and this is what we talk about, this is the final gift you can give, and you know it will spare. It'll spare, if there are multiple family members, confusion or bickering.
My wife and her sister started bickering the night, we're all assembled from around the country, mom's dead. Now what are we going to do? Well, are we going to have a mass or not? Well, I'm not Catholic anymore. I don't want to have a mass. Well, she'd want to have a mass. Well, I'm not going to the mass. Well, then we go to the church and they say, well, what songs do you want to sing? Songs? I don't know. Nobody knows any songs.
Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah. I love that. I should have thought of that one.
Can you play that?
I think Paul's starting to blend.
Readings. Oh, my God. We got to pick the readings. We got to pick that. And it was horrible. And everybody's crying and everybody's tired. Everybody started getting mad. And we're doing it. Became an awful exercise at the
and
yet worst
those,
moment.
And yet those the same
simple
same
things.
Categories, same things that you pay attention to. And let's say I'm preparing for a wedding, preparing for a birthday.
Look at the details.
Those are exactly the same steps you do, and you run full head on. To do those.
Yes. And the wedding may not
most
stick.
People, most people.
Yeah, wedding may not stick, but the funeral will. Yeah.
California don't. So, 100% of death stick.
So, yeah, nobody gets out alive.
But that's a good point, right? We rush to plan others, and we take joy in it, and we revel in the ceremony, and we got to have everybody there and embrace, and it's emotional, and it's wonderful.
Well, we talk about elder care, right? And we talk about child care and even pet care. And how senior care basically, it's gotten a lot better, but there's still sort of, leaps and bounds beyond child care and pet care. They're just, society has a level of comfort when it comes to children and pets that when it comes to seniors, we kind of don't want to deal with it. Sometimes.
We lost a cat in the last couple of weeks. It was very hard.
I found out about your loss on Facebook. Same way most people find about a loss of people now these days on Facebook. I wanted to talk about that briefly before we end the show, because it's like, to your point, everything is changing. The way we find out information is changing.
Yeah.
Oh, the way we celebrate things are changing.
Joe is dead. Oh, what are we doing? Nothing. Just Joe's dead. We put up a little thing on Facebook. Sorry for your loss. Done.
Right, but see,
don't forget, hit like.
Yeah.
Or heart, right? I don't know. Is this a like or a heart?
Or a little sad face, and you put it on there, like
well,
when our
but,
cat
but
died.
But if you type in R-A-D, I'm not promoting my name, but if you type in R-A-D now on Facebook, okay, you got these thumbs-up rockets that shoot off with, like, Star-Spangled Banner, like fireworks going on, right? When you type in the word R-A-D, right? Congratulations. Balloons come up, right?
Right.
Are we steps away from if somebody says, sorry for your loss, that I basically get a little Easter light coming through and maybe some flowers that pop up at the bumper seat. I'm saying this because
we're trying to make it
because
easy.
Here we are in a virtual society on a social media platform, and we're connecting in ways that we don't even connect to our neighbor, right? So if you're still doing everything based on a one-size-fits-all model, the way that you celebrate a funeral or you celebrate an end of life is that basically the way that, for example, Paul's dad wanted. Right. And that is the only model that we're talking about. Yeah. I've heard it. I don't want to talk about it. But if we're talking about the fact that you have options, you have choices, you have the ability to plan exactly what you want the same way you would plan your wedding before you even find the right person.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Right. Something that's healing and meaningful for you.
There you go.
And,
two words.
And you define that.
Healing and meaningful.
And that's what ceremony is. You want it to be healing and meaningful. And I think that's what,
now,
we do so well.
How do you, you guys get involved in the community earlier on. I mean, like you're saying, there's that educational component, right? So run me through a sort of a typical situation. Like it is it a new senior center? What do you look for?
They go door to door knocking and saying, have you thought about dying lately? And
so what when you're looking to do that, when you're trying to,
how do you start those conversations?
Engage into a community, where are you guys going? Where have you found success in getting that message?
And the second part of it is, do you help? Do you urge people to face what they don't want to face, or do you just sit and wait for them to call you?
Well, I'll let Neil answer the second part. We absolutely do not just sit and let people do as we see. We're guiding people. They're grieving. They're lost. They have lost their north. And so, our team is guiding and helping create something that is healing and meaningful for that specific
family.
How
early on, Becky? I mean, how early on do you get involved? Are you involved with people, or you're putting yourself in environments where people are sort of maybe of a certain age? Are you putting yourself in environments where people are maybe, doing family planning? I do aging in place. And in 2008, when I got certified, nobody wanted to talk about their house being modified because nobody wanted to talk about getting older, right? And I kept trying to push it from the perspective of elderly and aging, and nobody definitely wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I found success in actually approaching people that were estate planners.
And right? Because
people go to them to plan for their future. And I'm trying, nobody really wants to talk about the fact that they may not have enough money, but they go there and do that. So they were actually already in a position to have a receptive ear to talk about primary asset being your home and maybe increasing its, viability, getting more out of it. So where do you go?
As far as education, we will go into the schools. We were just at St. Margaret's talking with their peer counselors. We were talking to the kids. How do you come alongside somebody who is grieving? And it's very interesting because most of these kids' parents don't know don't know how to talk to somebody who's grieving. We do a lot of education with hospices, with hospital chaplains, with nurses in the hospital. It's amazing, even people who are with the senior center sure. staff, people who are in end-of-life care, still have a lot of fears and phobias surrounding death.
Right.
So talking with them about, as you're working with people who yeah. are dying, you know, how can we help you make that conversation easier? And what are some of the things you want to know that you could help the families? We do mm-hmm. we do an Unmasking the Mysteries tour. We bring people in and we actually show them the behind the scenes side of the mortuary. You can come in and you can see our care center. You can see the crematory. And it's great for these end of life care professionals to know, like, wow, this isn't at all what I expected. And I think when then they're having a conversation with somebody mm-hmm. who is at the end of life or mm-hmm. with the family, then they have a better understanding of
why have we let's give out the website.
Yeah,
Neil, go ahead and give out the website.
www.oconnormortuary.com.
We always do it at the end of the show.
Spell O'Connor because it can be a couple of ways.
O-C-O-N-N-O-R,
not E-R, because sometimes it can be E-R.
So it's oconnormortuary.com. And let me just conclude with the thought of, we saw almost 20 years ago our phone somewhat ring off the hook with a lot of just basic questions. We thought, wow, the public doesn't understand or know. Most people, when they have to call a funeral home or mortuary, will ask the million-dollar question, how much is it going to cost?
How much is it, yeah.
I would do the same thing, and I do the same thing when I have to buy a product or service because I'm coming from a place of ignorance if I haven't done enough research.
Right.
So what we recognized is we could go out and educate our community about mm-hmm. some best practices, what to think through, what pre-planning looks like. As you mentioned, one size does not fit all. We mm-hmm. can't come to everyone and say, hey, have a mm-hmm. Catholic funeral because not everyone's Catholic. And not even every Catholic wants it the same way. No, I know. Newsflash. Wake up. So really, our proactive model is educational-based. Mm-hmm. Our mortuary, we really turned into, we teach leadership when you mm-hmm. come into the company, and we teach how to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is profitable, and I'm not talking financially, but as a good steward for the community,
yeah,
where
right.
people can make really good decisions, mm-hmm. regardless if they see value in our company or not. Mm-hmm. We do have a very progressive pre-planning department. Yesterday, we had 15 veterans coming in for lunch and hearing the benefits of pre-planning.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see people are gravitating back to your original question. Mm-hmm. They are gravitating back to, I need to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
I do need to do something. And it is a disservice because what we said, if you came to me and said, I want to pre-plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do anything. I said, well, you know what? When you die, you don't own your death.
Mm-hmm.
Your family owns it.
Absolutely.
They're the ones who are left.
Yeah.
In the mess,
you have no
if you leave a mess behind,
right.
and it is messy, and it can be chaotic. So the simple thought we try and teach is it better to have a plan or mm-hmm. work out a crisis in 3 a.m?
You know what? I'm also
when you're crying and everybody's mad.
But here's another factor, I think, of today's living that is relevant to aging. Okay, we're living longer.
Yes.
The time frame of when you basically are retired, quote unquote, traditionally, to when you basically die, okay, is longer. There is more time for you to basically contemplate the end, if you will, and you have more time to prepare. It's kind of interesting because I'm seeing people, for example, instead of having everything in their will as far who gets what, for example, right, they're actually handing out stuff now to generations, their kids,
earlier,
their grandkids,
right.
while they are still alive.
To see them enjoy. Yeah, my
it's an interesting right. difference, I think, from what used to happen. And it opens up the conversation about whether there's an opportunity to address dying.
So can I ask a really hard question because we only got a couple minutes
sure.
left? I know Rod's parents are still alive. They're getting older. They're in their 80s. Have you had this conversation, and do you know what would happen when one of them...
You're asking me?
Yeah.
No. We joked about the fact that because of me doing this,
yeah.
okay, I actually caused my mom to, at some point, if she's listening, hi, Mom, right? I'm sure I'll hear about this later. But my mom basically went ahead and actually requested from our estate attorney, okay, their directives.
Finally.
And it was very interesting to see how my mother, who is meticulous, sat down and wrote, filled out every category by pencil. Not until I see my attorney am I going to ink this in, right?
She's a smart woman.
And my father basically looked at it and said, here, you go fill it out, and handed it back to her.
Yeah.
And we looked at him and said, no,
this
is about what you want, right?
Hey.
He didn't fill it out until we went there.
And that's
people are interested.
That's just the director for end-of-life care. That's not the director for
absolutely,
the,
but for it, that's why I don't want to even
You know, like some people don't want to even get past that point. So it is imperative, and I want to emphasize, we're coming up on Thanksgiving. We're coming up on Christmas. There are opportunities where people get together traditionally. Absolutely. I know you don't want to talk about negative stuff. You don't want to talk about Aunt Mary, who basically may have passed since the last time you saw
her. Pass the potatoes, right? And let's talk about passing away. Yeah.
Take this opportunity, actually, to talk about stuff like this. You may want to wait until the eggnog is flowing and, you know, everybody is like in a turkey coma. But, you know, there are opportunities to have some of these difficult conversations. I'm not saying full bore, okay, we're going to sit you down and, you know, basically do an intervention. But start feeling it out. Yeah. Start getting a sense that these conversations slowly, slowly can be made into larger communications where wishes of people get passed on. People get an idea of what you want. I know there's a parent, you know, child kind of blockage and all this stuff. But when everybody's around that table and everybody is sort of communing, that may be an opportunity also to talk about some of this harder stuff.
And the other part of that's a beautiful thought, is it can't...
It'll never happen.
It can take people a year or two to process from the initial conversation,
sure,
I need to plan, to actually doing it.
Absolutely.
Doing it.
Yes, yeah. Right. So plant the seed.
Yeah. I can only tell you from personal experience, it was wonderful that we did with my dad, and it was horrible the other deaths in our family where we didn't. It was just... It made the process that much more painful, that much more you feel they're gone. This is the last chance to say goodbye, to celebrate, to remember, to do all these things. You want to do it right.
You know, Paul, talking about how to what extent people will go to basically try to figure out a way to have this communication, right? It just dawned on me here while I'm sitting, is that I've been doing this show about aging for 3 years only to be able to open up a communication line with my parents.
Oh, yeah.
about what happens.
You're
right?
Brilliant.
Right, but I mean, it's like it is
put
actually...
Put this on your dad's phone and...
Listen, how many things on your to-do list every day do you actually enjoy and look forward to doing? And every day, every one of us has some things on that to-do list
that we don't want to do, right?
But we all know from experience that if I get those things that I don't want to focus and spend time on out of my way sooner, then I can actually enjoy my day.
Right? And it was a weird thing.
So to do this stuff for things that you don't really want to address in terms of aging, dying, prepping, estate planning, you know, all of this stuff, society somehow has convinced you that if you estate plan and if you make plans for the future in terms of will and things like that, that's an adult thing, a responsible, independent. You're a powerful person for doing that. Same thing applies to this.
Yeah. It was weird. My dad used to actually... I won't say he enjoyed talking about it, but he wasn't hesitant to talk about it because he got to sort of live out that last moment and the party that's going to be there. And he was a veteran.
Tell me what alcohol you're going to serve again.
Tell me what alcohol, the top shelf alcohol, and he wanted the taps to be played and all these things he had seen. He got to sort of, because he wasn't going to see that moment. So he got to sort of live it out as he described it and as he detailed it and as he talked about it. And it is. It's
you know,
the final moment.
It's the designer in me. But, you know, with technology the way it's going, we may be looking at a situation where you walk in and there's actually a virtual reality simulation of what to expect when you are not there, that you basically get a sense of what people will be experiencing.
I don't want to sound crude, but I saw the movie Soylent Green the other day on TV, and at the end, you know, it's all about they kill off the population, they turn them into food for the rest of the population. If you've never seen the movie, spoiler alert, from the old Charlton Heston days. But the at the end, they give people a final ceremony, and you get to pick this thing out, and it's this virtual reality setting where you're running in fields and you're swimming and you're doing all these
Star
things.
Star Trek holodeck, sign me up.
I'm curious, did anyone log on to ask any questions? Or is that
no.
Or have
it
we
was
silenced
dead.
The
it was dead.
Time ago.
It was dead. But yeah.
I didn't see anybody.
And the other part, as we're listening to the probably before the program came, just to be mindful of, and nothing against media, but I do think our society can be paralyzed or feared into death paralysis because when you see the media, it's nothing but tragic news.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
right.
I personally don't watch it just because it's like, wow.
You know, it sounds like a cliche, like what you're saying, Neil, is it's a cliche, right? We talk about the news. It's only news that you basically hear about is bad news. Yeah. Only thing that you hear about is sensationalized news.
If it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead.
If it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead. You don't want to hear about the good thing that happened down the street.
Right.
Yeah. The fact that people connected. Yeah. Now, you want to talk about the guy that went in and basically and killed people. And it's morbid. It's a reflection of our society. Look, we've got about 5 minutes.
Oh, less than that.
But
we got to wrap up.
What are some of... I just want to hear a couple of things from you guys that you're experiencing today that you want to share with the listeners.
Well, I think when it comes to this topic, it's very important to educate yourself. So even if you have years to live, or someone has a bad diagnosis or is an imminent death, is to do the research. You're going to benefit any time you put a plan in place. You can start off simply, the easiest thing to do is look at websites. Mm-hmm. That can give you a story of what the company looks like. Make phone calls. The next step that's most important is really go visit and literally interview the funeral home to see if they're worthy to serve you. Because they may or may not have the same values. If you can put, and I know money does matter because things can add up quickly. If you can put that off the side and look what they're going to do to help you beyond just a cremation.
What's the average cost on a funeral?
Average cost in the nation is $6,000 to $7,000, and that's through the funeral homes. Now we have to put on top of that the cemetery cost if you're talking traditional funeral. Cremation, it can be, depending on the part of the country, starting off at $500, go up to $4,500. My experience is people prefer cremation, and it's not because of space matters. It's more philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
You can have more actual ceremonies when you
take
prefer
the
cremation
and
than you do, because you can still have viewings. You still can have vigils. You can still have a funeral service. You can go to memorial at sea.
Right.
You can be attending or witnessing the actual cremation, be a part of that ceremony. So, you know, it's really about education. It's about looking, if you're planning for yourself, beyond yourself and looking for your family's experience. What's that going to look like? How are you going to set them up for a healthy trajectory when you are gone?
Vicky, we got to set up our next show here, so
Vicky, give people information on how they can contact O'Connor.
You can go to our website, O'ConnorMortuary.com, or you can call us anytime, 24-7, 949-581-4300.
Do you have any open houses or any places you're going to be in the next, let's say, month or so that you want to share with people?
We're going to do chocolate, wine, and yoga at the mortuary.
You're kidding.
I would not kid about that.
When is that?
December 13th.
Sign me
at
up.
What time?
6 o'clock in the evening.
You know, I am there. I've been practicing yoga for 30 years, and it is a great experience. If you're interested in coming, please do give us a call. Once again, 949-581-4300. It is to be experienced.
Start the conversation.
Thank you guys both for being here. I just want to say that one thing also to remember is that dying doesn't necessarily happen only because of age. So informing yourself and educating yourself is something that, regardless of age, is a wise thing to do, because you never know when you may be faced with it. You don't get to choose when you get faced with this.
And I'll give you one more takeaway that I learned. You know, you're never totally gone until people forget about you.
That's right.
We're not going to forget about
that final memory is so important. It's embedded. It's burned into your brain, that those final days that you spend with your parents, whatever they are, make them as joyful and meaningful as you can do.
Well, on that note, I think we should just basically say goodbye to everybody. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You are welcome at any time to come and talk, because I think this is a fascinating conversation.
Really is.
It really is, excuse the pun, not a dead end. Okay. And you can reach me at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, @gmail.com. You can call me, 949-212-8299, and we hope you join us again next week for another episode of The Rad Life.
You have been listening to The Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.